Let's talk TV, and RNZ-er, beloved RNZ-er Tony Stamp is in with me to chat about a few different shows today. Hey, Tony.
Kia ora, Jesse. How's it going?
Good. You're going to start with Free to Air?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good when there's a decent show on Free to Air, like an event show that a lot of people watch, because it doesn't happen so often anymore, but last week was really one of those.
Yeah, so this was Patrick Gower on Weed, and exactly as you say, it was just so nice to see something that had so much resource poured into it for such a good reason, because it is, you know, an issue that's going to affect the whole country next year. There is a referendum on personal cannabis use. And as you know, because you talked to Patty, it's his kind of deep dive into both sides of the argument. Should we? Shouldn't we? What's the culture like overseas? What's it like here while it's still illegal? And I thought it was fantastic. It smashed the ratings. The officially released figures were 367,000 people watched. That's the highest number of viewers for a show on any channel in 2019. Mm. And yeah, I think deservedly so. It's really, really entertaining, narratively sort of propulsive. You know, you're sort of up north in a plantation, and the next thing you know, you're off in California visiting, you know, weed dispensaries, which I was not familiar with, but it's these places in California where they sell everything from, you know, weed cookies to cannabis suppositories. And it's mostly about pain relief. So if you're not familiar with the issue, and, you know, I was pretty foggy.
Yeah, me too.
It's basically split, you know, cannabis can be split into two component parts, which is THC, which gets you high, and what becomes CBD oil, which is purely for pain relief. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Paddy has tied this whole story to, because he talks about his mother's passing from cancer, and she was in a lot of pain near the end. And, you know, this is an issue that clearly affects him very, very personally. We meet his dad, and he agrees. And they talk about, you know, if this was available at the time, maybe she would have suffered a bit less. So there's that really strong, strong personal hook.
There's a grueling scene, eh?
Oh, man, it is so grueling.
To see a journalist who you've only ever really seen on TV before being the alpha political scalp hunting 6 p.m. guy, to be sitting in the lounge with his dad, crying with his dad about, you know, this woman they both loved. It's really tough.
It's really tough. It really hit home. And, you know, these are things that affect all of us eventually. So, yeah, very, very relatable. Anecdotally, I actually had a tradesperson over to my house this morning, and I was watching the end of this documentary, and he was a young man, I'd say, you know, early 20s, and he sort of piped up, and he said to me, he asked me what I thought of the documentary. I thought it was great. And he said, it's so good to have a voice that you can trust talking about this stuff. And I thought, okay, that's where Patrick Gower is at now. And I think that's why it rated so well, is that he is, yeah, this voice that people really do trust. The other thing I want to point out is that he just has a fantastic face. It keeps cutting back to reaction shots to him when someone said something surprising or upsetting or whatever. His face conveys so much in a way that, you know, not many people do. And I started, like, fantasy casting him in a Scorsese film or something. I genuinely think he'd make a great gangster.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be a fallback career.
What I'd say about that, knowing Patrick Gower personally, is that anyone who's worked with him knows Patrick Gower, the man who is, like, a really entertaining, like, he's so funny off screen. Like, he's one of the funniest people that I know. And he's super charismatic, life of the party, you know, a bit of an oddball. And so it was kind of cool to see some of those aspects of him being translated onto screen. Like I say, he's a lot straighter when he's on 6 p.m. So it was pretty special. The other thing I should say is I think those ratings you were given were the 25-54 numbers. Would that be right?
That's
the commercial. Just so we get it right. Because I imagine, like, One News on a Sunday would have a total kind of, like, bigger 10-plus audience, but I think it was the highest rating show in the demographic that the channels look for.
Gotcha.
Just before we get an email from Nielsen. Great. And then there's another one on Wednesday.
Yeah, part two on Wednesday. Part one ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. It cuts away just as he's about to have a hit of a weed vape.
Oh, yeah. I love the scene where he asked his boss if he was allowed to smoke some weed.
Genuinely amazing, very candid scene that seemed to be legit. Like, his boss did seem to be worried about this, but advised him to go ahead because he was in America, and so, you know, technically it's legal.
So yeah, that's when. So Wednesday, he's doing the more of the kind of like, what would New Zealand look like if we made weed legal? Good one. That's Patrick Gower on weed. What else you got your eye on? I couldn't believe I laughed when I said this. The Dark Crystal.
Yeah. So are you familiar with the movie?
Yeah, and I'm no doubt a bit older than you. It's on the very edges of my memory bank, so it must have been before your time, surely. Or maybe you saw it on video.
I was a small kid. No, I'm older than I look.
Okay.
But I just remember, if anyone doesn't know the Dark Crystal, it's this Jim Henson-directed dark puppet fantasy made in 1982. Very, very niche. I did love it as a kid. I was a very small child. Looking back at it as an adult, I don't know if you've watched it recently, it is the strangest, weirdest, like most slow-moving film.
Really?
So niche. I don't know if it could get made today. The original plan at the time was to not have any English dialogue. Jim Henson just wanted the sort of alien dialogue with no subtitles, and the studio had to talk him out of it. So anyway, flash forward, you know, over 35 years later, and they have made an updated Dark Crystal TV series for Netflix. This seems to be part of, you know, this latest trend of cashing in on nostalgia for people like you and I.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, the Dark Crystal.
That's right.
That.
It's a franchise that's already proven. They know it's already got an audience. They don't need to try and sell us something brand new.
Yeah. And so watching it, I was sort of trying to work out, is this aimed at me, a, you know, 40-something-year-old man, or is this aimed at capturing a younger audience of kids? I have to say, I don't know if kids would be that into this. It's, as I say, very strange, very weird. It seems to be targeted at a slightly older audience. There's a Game of Thrones style map at the start, and you're visiting all these locations. There's puppets kissing and sort of romance and stuff like that. And I was just thinking, I don't know who this is aimed at. Technically, it's a real marvel, and I actually think that's the main reason to tune in. There's amazing puppetry sort of married with CGI, which is in itself kind of distracting because you're watching the bad guys called the Skeksis, who are these, you know, amazing puppets. And then I was looking at their mouths, and I was like, I'm sure their tongues are CGI animations. Just so much attention to detail. I've watched the first episode. It's, I think, a 10-episode series. Stacked voice cast, including Sigourney Weaver, Mark Hamill, Simon Pegg, Eddie Izzard. Yes, so many people. But I just found it slightly entertaining. And if you haven't seen the original movie, I think you'd be very, very confused.
Are you going to bother watching the other episodes?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a completist. It might get better.
Okay. Mindhunter 2. This is one we've just finished in our house. We enjoyed it.
So did I, but I had reservations. Mindhunter is this 1970s, early 80s set, sort of police procedural, really. Following these FBI agents around. The three lead characters are based on real people who are FBI agents, one of whom actually coined the term serial killer because they became aware of these people who were, you know, going on these murder sprees.
Yeah.
And
yeah, amazing to think that that term didn't even exist until these guys came up with it.
I mean, pretty recently, too.
And it's quite fun seeing them in the scene, like, what should we call them? You know, yeah. Sequence killers?
That's what they said originally, yeah. So they decide in season one that it is worth talking to these people in prison to sort of build a profile of serial killers in general. And
people thought they were sick for even suggesting that you might want to interview these murderers, right?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I guess time has been on their side because now profiling is a thing that happens all the time. And what that leads to, and I think what the big hook of the show is that you get these interviews with in season two, you know, Charles Manson and Son of Sam, these kind of famous serial killers. And the interviews are very, very close to what actually happened in real life. And some of them are verbatim, word for word transcripts of the actual conversations. And what that makes is this, you know, genuinely scary and crazy conversations where also any sort of logic goes out the windows because these people are insane. It's helmed by David Fincher, who you might know from directing Seven and Gone Girl and many other great films. It's very dark. I did have reservations about it sort of glorifying the killers in some way because so much attention is paid to them and, you know, the music gets very spooky when there's one of them on screen. And I sort of thought, is this in bad taste? But on the other hand, it is done so sort of matter-of-factly that it is sort of fascinating, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing. I thought the saving grace of season two was focusing on the Atlanta child murders, which I was not aware of.
No, and so we won't spoil what happens, but it was one of those ones that when the series, when you got to the end of the season, you started Googling, right, to find
out? Exactly, yes. Yeah, because it's fascinating and it was totally new to me. And, I mean, horrific, frustrating, you know, casts a spotlight on the African-American community in Atlanta and dredges up all sorts of issues there. And I thought, oh, that this makes the show worthwhile, just casting a light on this stuff that actually happened.
And it's quite fun stylistically as well because it's set in, I guess, the late 70s, early 80s. So the clothes and the cars. And
there are some great clothes, some great sunglasses going on.
I think I enjoyed season two more than season one. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe because it sort of stayed with the same storyline for most of it. Unusually, have you reached the end of season two yet?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So there's one serial killer they feature. He's in the first episode a couple of times during the season, and then in the last episode, nothing really happens with that one. It seems weird that they introduce his character, but they don't actually do any
solving. Is this the little vignette-y bits at the start?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want me to spoil that for you? Because this is a real guy.
Yeah, go on.
They didn't catch him until 2005.
Ooh.
And so this is a show that's set in the early 80s.
Right. And so they're showing that he's doing his thing as way back then. Wow.
But obviously people are saying, well, how are you going to resolve that in the show?
Yeah.
And I think the official answer was we're not.
Yeah, okay. That's definitely recommended if you can handle the subject matter. By the way, Jeremy Parkinson, RNZer, is listening, and he says he remembers reading Morris G's book, The Half Men of O, in Form 2. He said it's around the same time The Dark Crystal came out and he couldn't help noticing similarities. Have you done The Half Men of O?
Yeah, way, way back when I was a kid.
I was really into Under the Mountain, but I never got into The Half Men of O. Anyone else asks Jeremy? Maybe. You can text us on 2101. Thanks for coming in. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Jesse.
It's Tony Stamp, our TV reviewer, reviewing Patrick Gower on Weed. There's a colon in there. Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, and Mindhunter Season 2. That was the final one. We were talking about the serial killer one. And that is on Netflix. What's The Dark Crystal on?
That's also Netflix.
Okay. Netflix too.